Good morning, good evening, good afternoon. My name is Staff Sergeant Sam McCroll, the North Dakota National Guard's Public Affairs Office, and I'm here with a special guest today from the IT Help Desk, Luke Eberle. How's it going?
Pretty good, Sam.
Fantastic. So I have you on to kind of talk about what you do in your career as well as full-time M-Day side. But to start it off, can you just talk a little bit about yourself, where you're from, why'd you join the Guard, etc.?
Like you said, Sam, my name's Luke. I've been in the National Guard for almost 24 years now.
Wow.
Yeah, it's been quite a trip. Started off in 2001, wanted to join the Guard basically for a way to help pay college, and just wanted to join, but also wanted to do college. So the National Guard seemed like a good fit at the time. Wanted to do both. Everybody else was going to college, so I wanted to go to college, but I also wanted to serve. So that was May 2001, so it was just before 9/11, actually. Started off as an engineer, blowing stuff up, being a common engineer.
Nice.
Got deployed twice during that MOS, both times to Iraq, once in 04 and once in 08. Then my girlfriend, now wife at the time, got told she was going to be deployed, so I changed MOS to Intel Analyst. Went deployed to Kosovo, and then kind of had that decision, that 10-year, 11-year mark, whether I was going to do the full 20 or get out. Decided I was going to do the full 20, so I decided to become an officer. So I did that route, and during that time, I was able, luckily enough, to become full-time with North Dakota Guard, too. So they were able to not only provide me with my wife, but also a career.
Yeah, that's awesome. So you said you enlisted before 9/11. What was that like?
During red phase, actually, first week of basic training was I was actually on KP that day doing KP is a kitchen.
Yeah,
helping out with the kitchen.
Yeah,
heard it on the radio before everybody else actually knew about it. So if something was going on. Those kind of scrubbing pans, like what's going on? And then all of a sudden, drill sergeants came in and said, "We need everybody to stop what they're doing," and brought us outside and told us. Our nation was under attack, and it was an ongoing ongoing thing, and yeah.
How old were you at the time?
18, yeah, so just turned 18.
I mean, how did that feel as an 18-year-old finding that all at once?
It's a little bit surreal. It's kind of a way, it's a different than, you hear everybody, it was like, oh, I was watching the news, and I was consumed by it, and I was, it was, not saying it wasn't a blip, but it was, I was middle of basic training, or at the beginning of basic training, so
right.
I didn't have a... There's no outlets or no sources of news. You were locked in. So it was just whatever the drill sergeants fed us. And they kept it pretty it became more intense, if that's possible.
Sure.
Like, we have to get you ready for war.
100%.
We're going to war. We have to weed out the bad people. We have to weed out people that aren't here for the reasons we need them to be. So it became more intense. But it brought purpose a little bit. It was just – It's kind of a weird, surreal feeling, honestly. Everybody says that, but
yeah.
It was to be in basic training and then like have that happen, and mm-hmm. then know that, oh wow, I might actually have to like go to a foreign country and do all that stuff. So,
right, and you enlisted in, if I heard you correctly, a combat engineer.
Correct.
Starting off, so that means you would have been at Fort Leonard Wood.
Yep.
At
Fort
the time,
Leonard, yep.
I think it was called
Fort Leonard Wood. Basic and AAT were all together. It was like one station unit training, so we were like locked in for 15 weeks.
For sure. So you're at basic training. Everything's starting to escalate, right, training-wise. What was it like after basic training, coming back home?
There was a lot of thank you for your service type deal, and they found out you're basic brand-new recruit type deal. I don't know if you remember – that time frame. It was kind of a lull between mm-hmm. When I got back in December, January, there was the initial fervor was kind of, I missed the whole flags in every corner, that stuff I didn't see, but it was kind of like died down a little bit,
mm-hmm.
and it was a little bit before we started going to Afghanistan.
Right.
So
right.
there was that lull time, so I wouldn't say it was normal, but it was kind of wasn't like thank you for your service all the time, a little
sure.
bit, but it was like that initial... patriotic fervor was
yeah.
not as crazy as it was right like the weeks afterwards.
Right. So. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So you said you deployed in 2004. So you had basic training, one unit training is
yeah.
what? How long is that?
For my MOS, it was 15 weeks. So December of 01.
Sure, yeah. So you would have come back right around that New Year time, 2002.
Correct. Yep.
Leading up to your first deployment, what unit were you with?
Charlie Company, 141st Engineer Combat Battalion. So
okay.
They don't exist anymore technically, but yeah, that was the unit.
For sure. And what was, I mean, when you got back, was the unit aware that they were going to be going overseas at some point in time, or was it just a fog of the unknown?
No, actually, for the first year and a half, it was training as normal, as much as normal can be. And then we were actually going to get disbanded. Our unit was going to go away. Mm-hmm. I actually went to a different unit for a while that was deployed, so I was their rear detachment. And then one drill, my old readiness NCO, he came in and said, I need you to sign these forms for accountability. And we're like, that's kind of weird. He's like, yeah, our disbandment got postponed. So then at about 3-4 months before we actually got the call, we kind of knew something was up.
For sure.
So yeah.
Wow. That's crazy. I mean, as a new troop, I can't even imagine what you were like thinking.
And yeah, I was going to have to change jobs and all that stuff, but then it was like, well, maybe we won't. I was also 18, 19 at the time, so I kind of wanted to do something. So yeah. It wasn't like...
For sure.
It was kind of more exciting than it was like, oh my God, I don't have to go to war. It was like, oh, I get to do what I wanted to do. So this is awesome.
Wow. So I won't dive too much into the deployments. If you want to talk about them, we can. But what was it like going over to Iraq for the first time and your first deployment in 04? That was Iraq,
Oh,
right?
Yeah. Iraq, yep. Yeah. I was, well, okay. This is from a 40-year-old. Coming back down to his 20s,
sure.
And it seems silly at the time because now you've been through it and you've life experience to have kids. But as an 18, 19-year-old, 20-year-old, it was like super exciting.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I wasn't really that into college at the time, so it was like a good, like, I could actually do something and get out and, like, mm-hmm. This is what we trained for. This is what I wanted to do. Had a lot of friends in the unit. We were all going over together. It was very exciting. Like, looking back on it, and it seems silly. And it seems kind of like naive to be like, this is awesome. But like, you know, yeah, that's kind of how it was.
Well, I mean, I can only imagine the hype up or just the adrenaline that you felt from not just then, but just the accumulation of it from basic training, being told that this happened and then things getting more strenuous and serious for then you to come back to the unit and then, oh man, I'm going to have to change jobs. And all of a sudden, hey, we're doing this. And you're like, let's go.
You know? That's pretty much that's kind of how it was for my cohort, the 19-year-olds that just got in.
Sure.
We were all super excited to go over.
That's awesome. So your first deployment was in Iraq. Was that a year deployment?
That was a year of boots on, like, when they first started deployments, it was a year boots on ground. So that was like a year in country, and sure. Then that did not include train up.
Okay.
The train up is actually only about a month and a half, so it wasn't that long, mm-hmm. Thankfully.
So what was it like going over? I mean, you're energized, you're excited. What's it like? So you said there's train up,
There's train up for, we went to Fort Carson, Colorado for about a month, month and a half, and then we got shipped over to Kuwait, and we were in Kuwait for about 2-3 weeks,
mm-hmm.
And then we convoyed over to Iraq. When I say I was super excited to get there, but then when you actually hit the boots on the ground, then it's a little bit of a sobering experience. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, yeah. And then you find out your job, because we're combat engineers, which means we do counter mobility, minefields, clearing, a lot of combat engineer, shape charges, explosives, do all kind of that stuff. But we didn't actually know what we were going to do.
Right.
We were doing train-up. We were just training generically. Mm-hmm. Just train up, like, this is what convoys are, this is up. We didn't actually get our job. We didn't know what we were doing for the whole year until we were in Kuwait for about a week.
Wow.
And they said, you're doing this whole brand new thing called route clearance. You're going to look for roadside bombs. And we're like, what's a roadside? Like, we knew what roadside bombs were, but it was like a week training course.
For sure.
It was like, we didn't have any. It was like, what? We're doing what?
Yeah, so what?
In what vehicles we're doing those in?
So it's interesting you say that. So IEDs... they weren't a really prevalent thing to our, like, we, I mean, at the time, what was it like countering IEDs? Compared to, I mean, today, 2024, there's doctrine all over about IEDs. What was it like early on trying to fight against IEDs?
Well, like you said, there's doctrine. Like, we were one of the ones that were writing the doctrine.
Right.
So I'm glad I was not a lieutenant or a somebody in charge that they didn't have that responsibility. I pretty much had to, I was a E4, so I just pretty much take care of myself. Mm-hmm. And that was my job, you know, and then look for my job. And I was a gunner, so I was focused on route clearance or security on the site and stuff. So I wasn't really having to make doctrine. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh, I'm just an E4. I'm just on this in the turret. You know, it'll be good type deal. But I'm really glad looking back I didn't have that responsibility. I definitely wasn't ready as a 20-year-old for that level of responsibility. But it started from random old artillery shells on the ground that were, like, plain to see to, by the end of that year, they were radio-controlled, put in cement to look like curbing, to replace the curb, put those in. They were dug in the ground. They went from super not sophisticated to sophisticated within that time, that year. So it was just a, and I wouldn't say, it's kind of weird because right when you first start, it's super scary and you're like looking super, but then after you get used to it, you're like, oh, well, you know, it's just another day in the office. And then you just go and look for the things that don't look quite right. And a lot of times you spend an hour, 2 hours on what you think looks like a pressure plate, but it's actually just a plate on the ground. You're like, oh, well, that's 2 hours of my life that I'll never get back type deal. Sitting in a 130-degree heat. But, you know, that's just part of the job. And, yeah, it's just kind of a crazy to watch them go from randomly throwing dirt over an old artillery shell to actually making clay molds of things that normally would be on the side of the road to just, yeah.
That's crazy.
So, I mean, we found one IED just because it was raining and there was a dry dirt patch. That was the only thing that that you could tell that was different. So in 10, 20 minutes, we wouldn't have seen it. But it just so happened to be that it just started raining, or it rained a little bit, and they dug up the ground, put it in, and then left.
That's wild.
So, like, that's the only reason why we found that one was because the ground was dry.
That's wild. That is wild. So you said something key in there that I kind of want to touch on. It's like showing up another day in the office. That was something. It's interesting, you know. You're getting accustomed you know. Initially, you're like sobered, and then all of a sudden, some scary stuff. But then eventually, it just becomes the norm. When you came back, is it tough to kind of get back into the swing of things? Like, you know, just everyday life.
Yeah, yeah. I was 21 when I came back, so I didn't have a girlfriend, didn't have a, you know, my mom and dad, whatever. Uh-huh. But I just went back to college, so I didn't have a manual. I didn't have anybody that I had to adjust with me.
Sure.
Like, there's a lot of people that have the family members they have to adjust living together, mm-hmm. and kids have to come back with their parents. I was really lucky. I just went back to school.
Right.
So for me, it was, I wouldn't say it's easy, but it was just like. And it was pretty easy, and I went to college with a bunch of guys I deployed with. So we still hung out, we still talked, you know, we could still have that connection.
Yeah.
That we went to the same college together, and so it wasn't like I was off on my own little island. I didn't have to reintegrate with a spouse or kids or anything like that. So I got lucky in that regard.
Yeah.
I was young enough where I was just like, oh, I'm just going back to college now.
Yeah. Well, and especially since your buddies were there. Yeah. I can't even imagine how much that helped.
Oh, that was huge.
Probably been awesome.
Yeah.
So where did you go to college at?
We could have a whole podcast on my debacle in upper education, but to keep the story somewhat short, I was at University of North Dakota
okay.
at that time, yeah.
Fantastic. Did you play hockey at all?
I actually didn't know anything about hockey until I went to UND. Yeah. One of my buddies I deployed with was big into hockey, and I actually transferred to UND when I came back, so because
okay.
of the people. I was doing something else, wasn't really liking it, decided, you know, it's my life. I don't have to do this anymore. You also grow as a person, because I was like, I'm a little more independent now. I don't have to do what I'm doing.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like it anymore, so I'm going to go do something else. So then I was transferred to UND, and anyway, he was was like, you need to go to the Sioux games, and I'm like, what are you talking about? Like, it was, I didn't realize there was like a culture up there, but yeah, it was pretty awesome. Now I just say that I'm fully integrated into the hockey lifestyle.
I love it. So you go to college, yeah, and then you're on for your – at this point in time, you're still a combat engineer.
Yes.
Did you get a degree in that time frame? Because you said you deployed in 08 or was it 06?
It was 04, 05.
04, then 05.
07, 08.
So there wasn't a lot of time between
– It was 2 years to the date like the date that we actually came back to that, it was 2 years to the date that when we got our second call.
Wow.
Yeah.
Were you able to get an associate's in something at all?
100% not. Like I said, I could have a whole podcast on my college career.
That's
it was a bunch of, here's what happens. So I had a year and a half of college doing something. It's more of a blue collar tech, hands-on, like working with power plants and stuff of that nature, and gasificators and doing all sorts of stuff. And that's a two and a half year program. So I was about halfway done with that. And I came back and I realized I didn't remember anything. I was doing second year stuff or trying to, and I'm like, oh, I don't remember how to do the first year stuff anymore.
Yeah.
And then at that point I was like, I am not going to relearn anything.
Right.
So I went transferred to University of North Dakota, just basically a history degree, got about 2 years with that. I came back and I deployed, and then I was like, well, I don't want to do that anymore. So this is like I said, I have a whole college thing.
That's nuts.
So they kind of interrupted at the right or wrong time. I'm here now, pretty happy life. So
yeah.
So
what was your favorite topic of history? What's your favorite?
Oh man, favorite. I have a thing for the Civil War, I guess.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, it's super. I mean, that's such a crucial moment.
Yeah.
I mean, and the general stories that you hear about it.
Civil War, but I'm also into like medieval history, Black Plague, all that kind of stuff.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm gonna have to. I'm gonna talk to you.
Yeah,
about
it's I have a wide range of stuff that I'm into.
That's awesome. So, you obviously deployed again. At what point in time did you switch? You said you switched units on that second.
Yeah, because when we came back, the 141 did get disbanded.
Right.
So then I transitioned to what came the
142, right?
The A-17th.
Oh, okay.
I went to the A-17th Engineer Company, and then I did that for about. We did that for 2 years, and we got that. I went with the 817th the second time, which is just basically, I actually did the same job I did the first tour in the same location on the same route.
Wow.
Yeah. It was kind of crazy.
Were you an E5?
Still an E4.
It's still an E4.
Yeah. It was really hard to be promoted because when the 141 disbanded, there's a whole battalion of engineers. And what we got out of that was two comm engineer companies.
Right.
So you went from a whole battalion down to a whole two companies. So it was really tough to get promoted. The promotion was like 2-3 pages long. So
wow.
To get your 12 Bravo E5s was pretty difficult. So I wasn't really trying that hard either. Like I said, I was early 20s.
Yeah.
It wasn't really, guard was a secondary job.
For sure.
And college was my main focus. So
Right. So, you switched the units, or excuse me, you transferred to units after the deactivation, and then you go on this other deployment. You get back. I won't talk too much about college, but how many deployments have you gone on in total? I think you
missed
a couple dates. So three deployments. At what point in time did you decide? You know, I mean, you work full time now.
Right.
At what point in time did you decide maybe this is something I want to do full time?
It was during that, right at the end of that third deployment, because I was right around that 10-year mark.
Mm-hmm.
I had to resign. Basically, it was the mid contract decision whether I have 10 years in, I can get out, and not really miss a whole lot because it's still do basically double my enlistment, or sign up and then do the full 20 because you're not going to do. I wasn't going to do another 6 years and then get out at 16 years. So
yeah,
it was that time.
So when you went did you branch into combat engineer or like in the engineer branch when you became an officer?
No, I was a little more strategic. I was trying to get a job during that time before I got back, and I wanted to make this my career type deal. And my wife was working full time for the guard. My girlfriend, fiance, wife, whatever. Now she's my wife. She was working full time. She's kind of the big instigator of, like, this could be a career type deal because she was full-time. And I was like, well, maybe that's what I want to do because I really didn't know what I wanted to do. And I kind of had an inclination, but like, well, see what we do. Anyway, I was looking for jobs in the Guard. Got one. Got a couple before the IT realm. But I really wanted to get into IT. So I was going to go officer anyway, thinking about it. So how was that going to help me further my other career? So it was like signal. I can do IT. I like IT, if I can do IT here, then IT at the full-time side, then that kind of makes me an asset. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of why I chose Signal. Not, it was basically a career choice.
And you were, so you were with a 426.
426, yeah.
426 Signal Company. At first you were a, you said on your resume here, it says that you were a executive officer.
Yeah.
Slash platoon leader. What was that like?
Well, the 426 was a pretty small organization, company, but I was, I don't know, got cut my chops on my leadership, I guess.
For sure.
Yeah, that's kind of what it was, really.
Yeah.
Like, I've never really, wasn't really into, or I got out of my enlisted career as an E6. So sure. I had a little bit of, like, team leader stuff, but never, like, the whole platoon or nothing like that. So it was definitely, like, an eye-opening experience on what it takes.
Yeah.
And it's a... Signal's a little bit of a different animal. There's a whole walks of life with Signal companies because they have so many different jobs. So it's not like you're just a leader of common engineers. You're a leader of radio guys. You're a leader of computer guys. You're a leader of networking guys. So it's just a whole bunch of trying to, like, get everybody herding cats, basically. Get them going in the same direction on the same time and the same mission because they all have their own little quirks that they care about.
Oh,
that's, you know, their job. You know, like the radio guy doesn't really care about the computer guys, right? And the computer guys don't really care about the radio guys.
Yeah.
So,
but it all has to
work. Yeah, they all has to work together so people could talk. So,
fantastic. And later you ended up becoming the commander of the 426.
Yeah, I basically spent my first 10 years as an officer. It was pretty close, 8 to 10 years as a officer as in the 426. Yeah, I went to the platoon leader, went to both platoons as their platoon leader, then went to their XO and then went to their commander. So
that must feel pretty cool.
I mean,
get to see that a lot.
Yeah, it was pretty awesome.
That's awesome. Yeah. And I'm sure that was the radio guys, the network guys, and IT.
Yeah, it was.
They were all
was
pretty like
platoon
wow, this
leader.
Is awesome.
Platoon leader of the radio guys, and then platoon leader of the computer guys, and then the XO for the whole company, and then the off the commander. So yeah, you build some bonds with people because we didn't have a lot of turnover. So
sure.
The same guys were doing the same jobs. Mm. They were moving up to along with me, obviously, but not to the same level, but like they were moving on from E4 to E5 to E6s. Mm. So it was kind of cool to see that progression. And then you really got to really know a whole lot about people and their families and what made them tick.
Yeah.
I hope that was what made me a good commander. And I was like, I knew from what motivated them, what I could do to increase morale type deals.
Sure.
It was...
Well, I can't even imagine
kind
the
of a
amount
cool
of
experience.
I can't even imagine the amount of trust that you all had amongst each other. You know, like I said, that you don't see a platoon leader, then go executive officer, then commander for the company. You know, it's not a common thing. And then having the same people that haven't really—I mean, they're moving up, but they're not moving on in a sense. The amount of camaraderie that builds amongst each other.
I was really lucky. I had a really good full-time staff, and everybody in that organization over there was really professional, so like they were able to separate my platoon leader time, like, all right, he's, and either it was me being respected or they respected whatever the position, it was like, all right, he's the XO now and he's the commander. So it was they were able to transition. They didn't just see me as the old second lieutenant who didn't know anything, he just first got in type deal. They were, you know, I'd like to think that I progressed as well.
I'm sure if I asked anyone, maybe I'll have one of them come on the podcast and then I can say, hey,
let's not fact check.
Let's see how
that's fake news.
So later on, you then became the deputy chief deputy team chief, defense cyber operations element. What's that all about?
Good question. Still trying to wrap my head a little bit around that. But what that really entails is just cyber defense of the network.
Okay.
So it's like making sure your firewalls and networking equipment's all operating as it should, making all regulations and security requirements, making sure that the state in this case is following all what they should.
Sure.
Things of that nature.
And was that full time or?
That's probably my part time job. Yeah.
Okay. Wow.
Yeah.
That was awesome.
Yeah.
That's cool. So, and it was after that, right, that you eventually then got into IT here full time.
Oh.
Or was that during?
No, it was during. I got into IT when I became a platoon leader.
Oh, wow.
For 426.
Okay.
Yeah. So it was like I grew my career along with my military career. So
that's awesome.
Yeah. I started off at the help desk, just answering phone calls, doing tickets. Mm-hmm. Then got promoted to the supervisor. So, yeah, that was about the time I was a XO, maybe, I think. XO or commander is when I became the supervisor for the help desk.
Wow. So what's it like working full-time in IT? And well, we'll start off with IT specialists. What's that like? I mean, you said working on computers, et cetera, but, I mean, how much have you seen it change from and we don't have to get into too much of specifics, but what was it like starting out?
You're going to date me. It's like seeing your stuff in a museum.
Max. The old ones.
I mean, you go from Wi-Fi is this niche thing that could be working, but like mm-hmm. the computers had to have a special card to actually access Wi-Fi.
Wow.
You know, so it's like an add-on card. So I'm like I said, I'm dating myself. to actually like it's all integrated. That's how we VPN into stuff. Like the VPN thing was a novel concept back when I first started. Mm-hmm. Things of that nature. Yeah.
That's crazy. That's I mean, I.
You go from biology, AP biology books for your laptops to now pamphlets.
It's true. Yeah. Oh, my gosh. Well, and, you know, I think it was when I first started in admin, in an old 201 file, I found a floppy disk. And I was like, no way. I can't even. I mean, with IT, it's changed.
I think the
so
first
much.
Computers I worked on in the help desk still had floppies as their.
That's awesome.
Yeah. I think it is. We didn't use them, but they still had that option for 3, 4, 5s.
For sure.
Yeah.
That's awesome. So, working in IT and now being the supervisor for it, what's it like being the supervisor for it all?
Well, I'd like to say it's a little more stressful. Mm-hmm. It's a big picture. You get to see the stuff that saw how the sausage is made, high-level things like security requirements and like things you didn't really care about as a tech.
Sure.
So you're just like, okay, well, I'll just put the tickets in. If it tickets, I'll work on it to like having to plan. Mm-hmm. Refreshes and trying to match budgets and try to get like get positions that you want, like a politic for positions and all that, like all that stuff that like all that high level, not I should say high level, all that leadership stuff that you have to do mm-hmm. to like make sure that the techs have their what they need to do their job.
And I mean that's super beneficial having all that experience as a platoon leader and then executive officer and then commander. I can't even imagine how much that helps you. Just maybe.
Well, that it also lets me see or has let me see what it's like in the field versus office, the full-time force, what the troopers, the M-Day soldiers, the troopers that do Monday through Friday, mm-hmm. what they experience and how they need IT to work too. Because when we sit up here in the full-time force, we have a special idea of what it looks like and what it needs. And then we think we have an idea and then we push it out and then to actually see it in action, see what works, what doesn't, and then be able to take that back. Like, well, that's a nice theory, but we actually need more. We actually need to do something for the soldiers on the traditional on the weekends because it's not working for them. Because I was out at drill and we had no support, and we need to fix that type deal.
Yeah, the trickle down effect. It's always hard to manage. Yeah, I mean, even happens here. Like, you create something campaign or whatever the heck it is, and. Yeah, what's the trickle effect? Yeah. We think it's going to be this, but is it going to happen that way?
So I'm not sitting here in my ivory tower just making decrees. I actually go out and actually see what the decree actually entails. Yeah.
Yeah. So you're doing that, and we talked about you being at the 426, but where are you at now, full time?
Well, right now I'm still the DCOE team chief.
Okay.
So
what's that like?
It's a lot less stressful. Instead of a company, I have a team of experts, subject matter experts that work. But it's also kind of doing the Joint Force Headquarters, which is the HQ of the state, mm-hmm. making sure that drills go successful for them too, for help desk things of that nature too. So it's kind of like my full time job, except on the weekends.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Heck yeah.
So.
Well, we're about at that time. Is there anything else that you'd like to talk about? Anything you want to touch base on that I might have missed or et cetera?
Oh, man, I don't know. We can go. Let's see here. I think we're good. I mean, we could spend a lot of time on other things, but this is, I think we got the point across.
Correct.
Sir, I really appreciate you coming in, spending the time having this episode of a podcast. I think it was fantastic. I loved listening. From where you started to where you're at now. And it's nice that I get to work across from you in the hallway. For anyone listening online, appreciate you for listening in, and we'll talk to you next time.